I want to talk this morning about the experience of depression. Because I sense that a lot of people are having that in their lives. The first thing I want to say about depression is that it is impermanent, as is everything in the human experience. We can try to manifest permanence in many different ways, trying to stay happy, trying to stay comfortable, trying to stay hopeful, and for many people, trying to stay depressed, holding on to, even in rejecting something, the energizing of the thing rejected gives it what appears to be permanence. Trust me, it's not permanent. There are some illnesses where it can be prolonged and maybe persist. But mostly, depression and elation, and depression and elation and midground vary in our lives. They come and go. Our minds and our hearts have a particular relationship to that which we don't want. We often get caught by it. We often make such an effort to avoid it that that effort sustains it. We forget that the spiritual journey that everyone who's listening to this talk is participating in is the journey to becoming a witness, not simply to indulging all the things that arrive and arise in the manifested state, but to observing it, to becoming a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit, detached from it, so that rather than giving everything power and wanting it to last and persist, we sit back and watch how it, like everything else, arises and dissipates, comes and goes. It all does. The wonderful thing about a practice, a spiritual practice, is that it begins to give you the power, the capacity to let go, surrender, step back. It's a gift because many people don't have that gift. They have no capacity to step out of the materialistic manifested state that they find themselves in. And for many of us, there's not even an indication that that's possible. But if you're sitting here listening to this talk, if you're part of this experience, if you're part of this practice or even just learning about it, there is the capacity in every human being to step back, to turn their attention from the manifested experience around you, whether it's depression, unhappiness, grief, hope, expectation, joy, whatever it is, to come back and look at it, witness it, without trying to hold it. Whether you're trying to hold on to happiness and bliss forever, whether you're trying to let go of unhappiness and despair forever. Each of those determinations to have it and hold it are problematic in a world of transformative change that occurs all the time. Nothing lasts. Going inside to become the observer of all of this, which is what a spiritual practice gives you, allows you a kind of detachment. It's not about disassociation, which is something else. It's just sitting back and not being persuaded to indulge or grab hold of everything that comes up. One of the markers of that detachment, of that inner space, is a kind of minor, tiny, or massive element of contentment, or simplicity, or well-being. Sometimes it really is very profound. Sometimes it's just barely a finger hold onto something that just feels like okay. Doesn't matter which way it goes. What matters is if you step back, if you go into the doorway of your own inner being, you find something there that makes it bearable. Maybe more than bearable, maybe actually amazing, maybe actually wondrous. But if you go there for that, then you're already caught on experiential attachment, wanting it to be this way or that way, and witnessing is not wanting anything. Witnessing is showing up, being aware. It's observational, but it comes from a place of great ease, if you will, and awareness. If you can arrive even at the doorway of that space, let alone the depth of that space, the oceanic depth of that space, just at the doorway, you will know it's okay. It's okay. You may not know more than that, but knowing it's okay helps you with depression, sadness, grief, elation, joy, all of the things that arise. It helps you not get caught in or indulgent of those experiences. You get to this place where it's okay. And that okayness is an amazing achievement because many people do not have it and they suffer dramatically from the ups and downs, ins and outs of the outer experience. And if you are one of those people who does that or who tends to move toward really big expressions of depression and grief and all of those downward pulls, all I can say to you is take a breath, sit down, ask for help to surrender, and just sit still. And all you have to wait for isn't massive, eternal, awakened bliss. It's just, okay. That okay may not be or feel permanent to you, but it will be enough in the moment to help you see the depression, see the fear, see the anger, see all the stuff that's going on you around you with a kind of noble awareness without attachment. You are aware. Now there's a long journey here. And I have experienced in myself as this deepening occurs over the course of the last half century in this practice, this awakening, this expansion of oceanic awareness, if you will, that for me, it still does not provide what I would call permanent anything, including permanent bliss, which was promised by many of the spiritual texts that are all over the place, many of them from the East. Western spiritual texts promise stuff in the future. Much of the Eastern Buddhist Hindu texts promise it now. And I'm not saying it's not available and not there. I don't know that as a permanent thing yet because I'm still in some ways aware of the world of impermanence. But the deepening that I am experiencing these days has had a very powerful impact. I no longer simply feel the world of Bruce. I just feel the world. And it is a very complicated, manifested space. It used to be that I could watch the news at night and they would give me 5 minutes of the war going on in Israel between the Palestinians and the Jews. And I would look at it and have a kind of real discomfort. And then they'd be on to the next story, COVID, this, that. Okay. That isn't the case anymore. The case now is the reality of the suffering and the drama and the conflict and the extraordinary difficulty that I'm witnessing in that little blip radiates out into the system in such a big way that I can barely deal with it. It is so big. The suffering of the world is so massively a part of my experience. The empathy to the world is so big that I don't know how anybody deals with it. So what I have to do, which is very similar to what one does when one is depressed or sad or in grief, I take a breath and I have to really expand out even further than I've ever been in order to take on, if you will, witness, bear witness to the world. I kept thinking in my spiritual journey that I would arrive at this place where I go, I'm full of bliss. The world is really bliss. Doesn't matter. It's all a dream or whatever it is that happens. And truly, there may be truth to that and people who arrive at that. My experience is I am that world, and I have to find a way to work deeper than I've ever worked before to witness the what is of humanity, of being, of the planetary truth, which is it is a world of enormous complexity, enormous struggle, enormous beauty and love and joy and sadness and despair and evil and all of that. And in the famous words of Nisargadatta, I am that. But there's also the practice that Rudy taught me, which you all know. Take a breath. Go inside. Ask for help to surrender. And this very subtle detachment happens. And you become a witness to something that is basically incomprehensible. We cannot understand the world. We can create stories about it. We can adopt other people's descriptions of what the world is, what it's here for, what's waiting for us on the other side. You can find all these places of that allow you to rest and relax in your own being, in a sense. It's a kind of detachment. I fear it often goes to disassociation. But really, what it is the witness to the unknowable, the unknowable, the undescribable. And when you start to witness that, certain things start to arise inside you. Or at least, forgive me for saying the word you, I will say the word I. This arises, it feels universal, but something arises that takes in the whole picture, and it feels, before anything else, a kind of wonder and awe at the mere existence of totality. Wonder and awe. I do not get it. I do not get why there is evil in the world, why people are so horrible to one another, why people can be good. I don't understand it, but I know what I feel. An image comes into my mind all the time. It's not a real image in terms of something that I know happened, but it speaks to me so deeply. And that is Jews, probably my ancestors, being loaded onto cattle cars, doors closed, stuffed in, no room to sit, no room to do anything but stand, and being there with no idea of where one is headed, why one is being packed into such a horrible place. And there's, in my mind, an old man standing there next to a mother with a little child who's crying and that he's hungry and scared. And this man, whoever he is, in a way I identify with him, takes the last bit of bread that he managed to bring onto that train, and he hands it to the little boy who's crying, who eats the bread. As a screenwriter, that moment resonates with me. That act of kindness, that deprivation of self for other, that giving in those awful, awful moments has God-like power for me. It is an understanding that in the worst of the worst, goodness and kindness might prevail. And if they do, and if I were writing movies and telling stories about it, that would be the moment that I would want to arrive at. That act of kindness. Most of us are not being packed on trains and being driven to places where we're going to be annihilated. We are just driving around, we're in a car, we're walking around the block, we're going shopping, we're living lives that are not assaulted by that larger truth that in fact is actually unfolding while we're in the car, while we're in the market, while we're walking and sitting in our house. These things are going on in the world. Very powerful, very powerful. My son Ari is a witness to so many of these things. He goes on these strange trips that I do not fully understand. He went to the place, to this African country of Burkina Faso, just as they were undergoing a revolution. He's gone to Mogadishu, Iraq. He's leaving in 3 days for Jordan. I don't know why he goes to these places. He goes to Guantanamo. He's met with people who've blown up Americans. He's shaken their hands and looked them in the eyes and says, "Dad, you're looking at human beings." I feel nothing but fear about his going to Jordan at this moment in time, right next door to a war that's erupting. There's nothing I can do to stop that. All I can do is take a breath, ask for help to surrender, and allow the world and life to move forward as each complex individual in this world needs to move. We each have to go our way, and we each have to allow the other to go on their journey. This is really hard work. Some of us try to hide from it, and I've described all the stupid ways, like endless Netflix, endless Jack Daniels, God knows what drugs are available, so many ways of not having to deal with all of this. And depression comes in and you grab hold of it and it lingers and you start to build a world around it. And that's not the journey that we're on. It is for many people, but we have been taught, take a breath, ask inside for help to surrender, step back. You can step way back, or you can just step a little bit back and witness this thing that's happening. It is impermanent. People are going to rise up in it and they're going to die, as are you. Every one of us is on a journey of temporary nature. We have and then we lose. It's given, it's taken away. It will always, always be like that. If you are here on the journey of having and keeping and maintaining, you're going to suffer the second half of the journey, which is the loss and the giving up of everything. I went to the doctor the other day and he said, "I have spinal deterioration and there's nothing they can do." And it's not like it's a death sentence. It's not uncommon to old people, but there's nothing they can do to stop this degeneration. I know there's painkillers and things like that you can get involved in, but for me, it was like Of course. Of course. Now I have a name, and there's more names than that, actually. But you realize there comes a turning point in your life where it's not getting better the next time. It's only going in another direction. Stepping back from the engagement with whatever the world is that's distracting, and just looking existentially at the reality of your life and knowing it's about building and having and getting and enjoying and all of this stuff. And then it's about losing and putting aside and letting things go and leaving. That's really what this journey is. And there is no part of that journey that shouldn't be filled with wonder. No part of it. I watched a documentary on Oliver Sacks the other night. That was on PBS. Fascinating documentary, but a man who walked into death with such openness, such clarity. It was so inspiring. He was so empathetic with the world and nothing but fascinated with the world, including his own death. And I get that. I don't know if I will be as eloquent as he was at the end or if I will be as noble as he was at the end. But I see the process as being so extraordinary. So you wake up in the morning and you're depressed. It is not the end of the world. It is not the end of the day. You may not be depressed after your first cup of coffee. You may not be depressed 4 days later, but you may have 4 days of cloudiness and depression. Rather than give yourself over to that and project it as the rest of your life's story, look at it, observe it, and be aware. Look at what depression is. It's part of a cycle. It goes down and it goes up. Look at the different parts of your life and how they manifest in wonderful ways and in really difficult and struggling ways. You don't know what's going to come, but there is a part of you. It is a godlike part of you that steps back and witnesses what it is. It is seeing the world through your eyes, feeling it through your heart, open and available or limited and constricted, depending upon who you are and how much work you do. But the universe is there essentially to be observed, touched, felt, experienced by you, or you would not have been created. You can experience it with open arms and love and gratitude, or you can experience it as a total misery. It's kind of a choice in a way, but if you have made the choice to stop for a moment, to sit still, to take a breath, to meditate, to witness being, to detach from all of that stuff, it takes on a new perspective, or maybe for the first time itself, perspective. To have perspective, to see it from a deeper place or a higher place, allows you to witness the world without being caught by and dominated by its slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. It is what it is. There's great suffering going on. If you really want to open deeply, you may touch that suffering. If you want to touch that suffering in a big way, you're going to have to open more. And if you open more, you will feel this thing I've been describing recently, oceanic awareness, in which all of the suffering of the world is part of your awareness. You can engage it, you can go, why? Or you can just go, thy will be done. I can't tell you how to do it, nor is that my job or the job of any teacher or any religion, really. I can only tell you what I was taught by Rudy that works for me, which is take a breath, ask for help to surrender, step back, whether it's a little bit back or way back, witness the reality that you're in. And if you're lucky, you may discover it is an amazing place to be. Being alive is an extraordinary reality. Being alive is truly an amazing thing. And if you can touch that, witness that, and find what occasionally will arise as deep gratitude and wonder and joy, great. That's kind of what we're here for. Hopefully you can touch that up to the last millisecond of your manifested being. Just go, wow, wow, wow. Yes, it's suffering. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, you may lose everything you care about. Yes, they may take it away from you. In fact, they will. They will. They. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. And watch what remains. And what remains is the watcher. The watcher. The witness remains. Will it remain past that last final second? Come back and tell me. But I can tell you for the moment, even if it doesn't, you will have witnessed something remarkable. And if it does go beyond that, so be it. We are eternal. I suspect that we are eternal. I feel that. My inner experience tells me that life is a very small part of what we are. But it's an amazing part, and we are lucky to be here. I am grateful to be here. I don't know day to day what it is or how it is or why it is. I have no idea. I used to think I know, I knew. I have read all the texts. I've read all the books. I've had a lot of ideas of it's this or that. Now I've gotten rid of all the books, all the ideas. All I know is, wow, wow. I'm amazed I still talk about it because I don't even know how to put it really into words, but we are witnessing the miraculous every day. If you wake up depressed in the morning, don't be angry at yourself. Don't judge yourself. Don't think this is the end of the world. It's impermanent. It will come and go. It will all come and go. Step back, take a breath, and witness what is. That's the ride we're on. Enough said. Any questions? Comments, criticisms, George.
Isn't this like the dance of Shiva, that everything is constantly being destroyed and being recreated, and we're looking at good and evil? But you know, Ari goes to see, look at somebody at Gautama, and he sees a human being rather than somebody who's destroyed a bunch of people. But you know, Rudy used to say, if you go to jail, nobody's ever guilty. They all had a good reason why they did something. You know, so
well,
we're all judging everything, but should we? You know.
The human mind is not capable of getting this. On the other hand, it's a pretty amazing instrument, and it does get bits and pieces and parts of it. And there are times where having it is really important, knowing it is important. And then there comes a moment, and it's very Taoistic, where you go, nope. And you just start to let go of all the stuff you know. And it is really liberating. Having it as an understanding is very meaningful at a certain moment in time. Letting it disappear is another important moment in the human journey, I think. And all I can tell you is that the less I know, the more is made known in a way. It's not grasped, it's not contextualized, it's not intellectualized. It's just an experience of awareness. And it's amazing. And it is Shiva. It's the dance of Shiva, the creation and destruction over and over. And then we start to find our way to the observational spot where we see what it is and we go, ah.
You know, I sent you a video yesterday of these astronauts going into space, and the first vision they see of our planet, they come to the realization that they're part of everything. And not just the planet, but the whole universe. And, you know, a couple of them are saying the same thing. And so it must be that is experiential when you leave the Earth or whatever.
Well, again, I mean,
we're all part of the same thing in reality.
We can't all get on that rocket ship, but we can sit down and open ourselves to a rising energy, which will give us a planetary view and a universal view that makes us aware that we're part of something even beyond what the Earth is. And if the Earth exists, all that exists is beyond that. And so we are part of something. And when you know you're part of it and you know you're there, it is astounding, astounding just how powerful it is to be united with totality. It's astounding. That's my experience. Anybody else? Kathy. Kathy, you have to put on your little unmute thing.
I've had the experience when in a state of great openness of tremendous sadness, sorrow welling up, I mean, oceanic, for the whole of the world of existence, out of nowhere, and being compelled to sob and just experience it. But then the understanding has come that if I let my heart break in that way, it mends bigger and deeper. There's a deeper understanding and compassion that comes that way.
I share that experience. I know that is true. There is no purposeless experience of great suffering. It has an additive, and I guess a subtractive quality to it, but mostly we become sensitive to, appreciative of what is on every level. And some of it is deeply disturbing and some of it is deeply awakening. But you cannot appreciate the magnitude of it until you let yourself go to those edges of existence. And it is, you know, it's the breaking that lets the light through. It is the expansion that lets the feelings magnify. It's the journey we're on. Some people don't go on that journey. They just keep it, you know, close to home. Nothing wrong with that, except that if you go on the bigger journey, you get to touch a kind of godliness that is really worth finding. It's perhaps one of the reasons we're born, to touch that and to know that and to be one with that. I sense that it's worth every amount of effort we put into it, because what's given back is so powerful. On the other hand, it's work. If you're going to own that oceanic awareness, you better be able to handle it. And also what I talk about week by week, let go of the boundaries that make it yours. Don't make it personal. Let it be yours. Yeah. And that's really powerful. And it's and that's why we're here, I think. And it's I honor it in you and in anybody who touches it. It's a very extraordinary reality.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, so let me try one thing here. This may be the wrong audience because this is so Middle West and Eastern Coast and West Coast, but I am thinking in 2 weeks now, not next week, which will be the West Coast class, but the week after that, of having it back in my home, having it back in the classroom, which is upstairs, somewhat confined. I have one window I can open, and to do it with people who are vaccinated and who want to come. I'm going to send out a note to find out if there are enough people to actually do that and to welcome you back into a sitting space where we can all be together. And I feel a hunger to do that. Because of Zoom, I've opened up this practice now to people on the West Coast every other week. And I think for the time being, I will continue to do that. In other words, I'll have in classes here in Red Hook twice a month and two Zoom classes twice a month on the West Coast. And for those of you who are neither on the East Coast or able to get here, I think you can tune into the West Coast classes on the 2 weeks a month that I do them. The only problem being that it might just become too many people, and I don't know that yet. It may be fine, but we'll play that game and see what happens, and then we'll decide whether it works. Another possibility is that I could do part Zoom and part live here in the space that I'm in and see if that works. And I'm open to trying that and seeing if it feels totally artificial or feels like natural. But we're in a new world now, the Zoom world, and I never actually planned to do Zoom classes, and now we're doing them. So I have to honor that as a way of moving forward. So I will be writing to East Coast people soon and letting you know and hearing back from you to see if there's enough people who want to be part of this. And if not, we'll keep it as a Zoom experience. But if I can bring people together somehow in my own mind, that has a richness to it that I truly, truly appreciate. So that's going to be what I'm going to attempt. So you'll all hear from me. I just want to give you the heads up that things are going to be changing the next time we're together, which will be in 2 weeks. And I will hope to hear from you, figure out what the best approach is, and let you know when I figure it out. Until then, thank you. Thank you so much for coming today. I tell Blanche every Sunday morning, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know what to say. And of course, luckily, I have nothing to do with it. I just sit down and it tells me what to do and what to say, and it works just fine. But there is a human being in all of this, and a human being, with a degenerative spine and all this stuff going on. And I feel the difference in the aging process. And I don't want to, get into that every week, but it is really transformative. And I don't know where it goes ultimately in terms of the teaching and all of us being together. But as long as we can be together, I want to be together. The other thing I want, and I'll just throw this out as a tiny little seed form, but I think it's important. I want more people to teach. And I'm saying that knowing that Rudy, when I used to ask, can I teach? He says, you're not ready. And I went, so be it. Rudy made teachers who I feel were not ready and who I think were less than perfect teachers. I think so many of you can be, and I would like to see become teachers. You don't have to become teachers of multitudes, if that's your thing, maybe, but what I would like to see is people who can teach a few other people, if need be, who can begin to share this in a way and feel that you have a right to do that, and that you've been anointed in a way. So put that in your mind. I don't know what I'm going to do with it or where it will go, but I honestly think what we're doing here can be and should be shared. And you don't have to be a great teacher. I'm a perfect example of a not great teacher who still teaches. And you're all people who can do the same thing, I believe. I don't know if I would have an ability to pull you back if things look like they're going in the wrong direction, but I saw Rudy put people out there that never got pulled back, and things continued in their own strange way. So I think it's the universe that will do the work. And all I can tell you is I really do honor you guys. I really do think you are, in your attention to all of this, important, and sharing it is meaningful. So I hope that we will be passing this baton in time. I don't know exactly how it will work, but put it in your brain. You can even write me and say, I want to do it now if you want. But basically, I just want you to know I'm thinking in those terms. So having said all that, thank you.
Bruce, you can teach a person to drive, but you can't prevent accidents.
That's so true. Exactly right, George. Thank you so much. Absolutely. Hopefully you'll all learn to drive. I think you're all good drivers. that's my feeling as of this moment. So much love to everybody. And I'll see you in 2 weeks, some of you in person, which will be really, really wonderful. Take care of yourselves, guys.